8. The horror of names unchanged. Something breaks. Ran feels it go. Feels the constant chest-to-chest, visor-to-visor compression slacken. He assumes his own formation is collapsing. But it is not. Managing, for the first time since combat impact, to turn his head, he sees his line, though tangled and torn, is relatively whole. The slackening is coming from the enemy quarter, no matter that the enemy outnumbers them 40-1. Somehow the enemy has lost its focus and impetus. On! He yells, though the order is not needed. His men drive on, shields held where shields still remain. Chain blades wail as they swing and blurt as they connect. Ran buries Hunter in the skull of a Sons of Horus warrior, then finds the axe wedged and uses headsman to shear off the helmed head it is stuck in. For the next few moments, the blows he rains with Hunter use the wedged skull as a cudgel, breaking rather than chopping until the helm and the skull inside it disintegrate and mash off his axe head. They have space now. They are inside the reeling scrum of the enemy, but there is space. The enemy isn't retreating, but it is separating. Ran cuts down a roaring World Eater and smashes through a gun servitor cart, and then sees, just ahead, the reason. Through the whirl of bodies, he sees white jet bikes, riders striking from the saddle, cutting across the front of his line at an angle. Namahi's white scars have punched in from the Veer Atmosine, driving their machines and firepower into the right flank of the traitor host. The riders have no space for speed or maneuver. They are moving slowly, like horses wallowing in a river, deep in the enemy mass, ripping fire from their bike guns, point blank, as they chop and hack with their swords and lances. Ran is almost overcome by their bravery. The White Scars have willingly sacrificed their speed and mobility to penetrate the thick of the brawl and relieve the pressure on the left span of his line. They could have held back, spared themselves, or run harrying charges from a distance. But the White Scars' resolve and their unflinching allegiance to the Imperial Fists has never been more boldly affirmed. They have driven straight into the density, foregoing all of their trademark advantages to support the Imperial Fists before they fell. Ran hopes he lives to the end of this day, simply so he can take Namahi, master of the Keshig, by the hand and embrace him as a brother. In an age when brother murders brother, this seems like a miracle of fraternity. Ran leads his men in a slogging, shielded drive to link up with the White Scars. Artillery and mortar shells start to land along the line of the causeway as the enemy's support formations try to break the deadlock, heedless of their own troops within range. Ran takes apart a Death Guard after a furious exchange of blows. The Death Guard's warhammer cracks Ran's pauldron in the exchange, and he feels tendons snap and bones bruise. Past the Death Guard, Ran strikes down a World Eater before it can bring its chain axe to bear, then hacks apart two bulk weapon servitors. He reaches the nearest White Scars rider, Halen, at his heels, and defends them from flank attack, driving back the warriors mobbing them. The fight becomes stagnant and dirty, just grinding to hold ground. He smacks aside World Eaters and bladed automata, then guts some skinless neverborn thing that lunges at him. Some of the White Scars dismount, their bikes destroyed, and slash with their tulwars and long sabers double-handed. Then Fisk Halen falls, toppled by a thundercrack blow that splinters his faceplate. Still alive, Halen tries to crawl free, using his tattered shield to fend off his furious attacker. Ran slams in to protect him. His helm display makes identification. The marker, Saw Talgron. Ran remembers Talgron, a fierce word-bearer from the early days. It was said he died, following injuries received on Perception Primus, begging not to be interred in a dreadnought chassis. Something has brought him back and granted him a second life. He is a giant, wrought from augmetics, bulging with synthetic power. His filthy armor is badged with parchment and pages of Lorgar's deranged litanies. His face, framed in crude bionics, is a raddled mass of burn scars. He wields a fizzling Crozius that drips with dark, oily power. The mace head of the Crozius is fitted with jagged side blades. Talgron is chanting something as he swings for Halen, like a form of blessing or benediction. He is almost crooning the words, the only ones of which Ran can make out are dark and king. Ran is convinced that the word-bearer is making his utterances out of some twisted kindness, as if he is offering last rites to fortify the soul of the man he is trying to pulp into the rockcrete. The most horrifying thing about him, Ran decides, is that he still has a name. Most have lost theirs in crackles of non-loading graphics, but Talgron still generates a marker. He is a monster, demented, a burned husk caged in bionics, his mind blown out by warp madness, but his name somehow clings to him. He is still Saw Talgron. This is the fate they will all face, Ran understands. Not to die, but to remain themselves, their identities preserved no matter how far the warp twists and mutates them. Ran engages. It is like striking at a bastion wall. Talgron's machine form is so large, so powerful, it seems rooted to the ground. Ran's blades draw no more than sparks. Talgron scythes at him with the burning Crozius, and Ran ducks back. Talgron chuckles. He says Ran's name. He says it fondly, as though he is greeting a long-lost friend. He offers his hand. Repelled, Ran strikes again. Talgron grunts and swings at him. Ran tries to deflect the Crozius, but the word-bearer is too powerful, and the impact against Headsman's Haft almost spins Ran off his feet. He backs away. A berserk world-eater lunges at him from his right, and he scythes, sending the brute flying with an understroke cut, keeping his eyes on Talgron. The giant is advancing, singing his litany to Ran. There is sadness in Talgron's blood-logged eyes, as though he is disappointed that his old comrade has rebuffed his heartfelt blessing. Ran backs off further, avoiding each swing that comes at him. He does not know how he is going to overcome the word-bearer, but at least he is drawing him away from Halen. He sees one of the white scars dragging Halen clear. Talgron swings again, catching Ran well enough to chip his plate and rock him around. Bedwyr and Cortamus rush to his aid. The three Imperial fists, side by side, attempt to contain and stop the monstrous word-bearer. Cortamus, too eager or too brave, dies almost at once, his head crushed into his body by a downswing of the infernal Crozius. Bedwyr locks in, using his upraised storm shield to hold off Talgron's rain of blows. The sight of Talgron's name marker reminds Ran that his display still has some function, despite the sensory overload and deluge of data. He locks a sensoria analysis of the word-bearer's bionic form, pinpointing structural weaknesses using a scanning algorithm devised by Dorn himself for target integrity assessment. It pings up a flurry of indicators, and Ran lunges in, with Bedwyr's shield warding him, striking with his axes. He swings not with the blind fury demanded by the fight thus far, but with a surgical accuracy, slicing the left knee at the outside of the joint, a block of servos above the left hip, and across the inside of the right elbow. Each impact severs motive systems and causes lubricant and hydraulics to spurt. Talgron lurches back, hobbled, his augmetic body no longer obeying him as diligently as before. Ran puts another slice in across his neck, cutting a sheaf of cables. Furious, wounded, Talgron tries to come at him, swinging his mace. Bedwyr's shield blocks the swing, but in that instant, Ran sees that the blade spikes of the Crozius are in fact eagle wings, the aquila span of the Imperial icon. It seems a bitter disgrace that Talgron is killing loyal sons with such a symbol. It fires Ran with incandescent anger and outrage. He puts Headsman's blade across Talgron's breastplate, tearing off the pages of his Gene Lord's book, and hunters through the side of Talgron's citrusized face. Eyes wide, Talgron snorts blood from his nose and dies for the second time. His immense bulk collapses with a crash. When Ran turns from his kill, he sees that figures in red have joined the fight. The promised four squads of Blood Angels, delayed, no doubt, by other traitor warbands, have finally arrived, raking into the mass from the right with their gleaming longswords and stabbing lances. They are led by the noble Dominion Zephon. Their charging thrust, impressively as swift as any White Scar's assault, catches the traitor mass across a new angle, squeezing the head of it between the Imperial Fists and White Scar's formations until it bursts. The traitor host, harried by the Loyalists, ebbs backwards into the smoke, its savage urgency lost to hurt and surprise. An eerie, aching silence falls upon the causeway, now cleared of all enemy except their mangled dead. Ran lowers his axes. He knows it will not last. Talgron's butchered corpse is carried off the field in the confusion by his brethren and brought to Portis Bar. Later, in the terrible aftermath, he will be made to live again, against his abject wishes, for a third time, interred in the sarcophagus of a dreadnought shell, to endure the living death he had always rejected.